Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMoney.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. It's the 1870s in what is now Manitoba. Representatives of the British Crown, the Anishinaabe and the Muskegon Cree, are negotiating the ownership and stewardship of the lands there. James Mackay, a former fur trader for the Hudson's Bay Company, plays a crucial role in translating. Treaty 1, the first of a number of such treaties, set the stage for the expansion of European settlements in Western Canada. But what did they mean for the Indigenous peoples there? Were these treaties honored? And what role do they still play today in 2024? Well, a fascinating six-part documentary series called Treaty Road examines in depth the history of these treaties as seen by the descendants of the original signers and their representatives, namely the show's co-hosts, writer-director Saxon DeCoke of the Métis Nation of Alberta and artist and educator Aaron Goodpipe of the Anishinaabe Standing Buffalo Dakota Nation. Saxon is an accomplished filmmaker who brought us CBC's The Invincible, Sergeant Bill, and CIFF's Land Acknowledgement. Aaron is known on stage and screen for productions like Res X, The Other Side, and Bathsheba, Search for Evil. The series premiered on APTN earlier this week, and I'm very pleased to have Saxon and Aaron here with me from Calgary via Zoom to tell us more about Treaty Road. Hi, Saxon.
Hello.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Daniel. Hi, everyone.
Thanks to both of you for meeting with me.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're feeling very grateful to be here.
So I know this took a six-hour series to answer this question, but briefly, what are these treaties? What are they about?
You know, the treaties are so vast to sum it up. In one sentence is, would be fairly difficult. You know, essentially from a Crown perspective, they were to gain access and control to the land and to be able to take over that land and then eventually all the resources as well. Aaron, maybe you want to jump in and give a better explanation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that, Saxon. You know, as Saxon said, the treaties are so vast, but essentially what they are, they were sacred agreements that were made between Indigenous nations and representatives of the Crown, which were ultimately representing the newly formed Dominion of Canada and Britain. So, yeah, you know, as Saxon said, a big part of this for Canada was to essentially propagate and extend their colonial program. And so to do that, they actually had to extinguish Indigenous title to the land. And a huge reason for that was actually that they had enshrined in their own legislation in the Royal Proclamation in the 1700s that they recognized Indigenous title to the land. So then, you know, you fast forward a few centuries and they actually had to address that. And so they had to do whatever it meant, whatever it took to go to Indigenous leaders and try to get a permission, a cede surrender clause signed by Indigenous nations. And yeah, essentially in those negotiations, there was a lot that came out of it. Basically, a sharing of the land is how Indigenous people would summarize that, a nation-to-nation agreement. And yeah, it has everything to do with Canada's legal right to occupy the land, which concerns every single Canadian.
And would you say these treaties were imposed or negotiated or somewhere in between?
Definitely somewhere in between.
Yeah.
As we were kind of mentioning, there's different perspectives on what the treaties were and what their impact has been. Again, Indigenous people saw it as a nation-to-nation agreement where, they were creating this agreement for mutual benefit and reciprocity, and to share the land. But that's not necessarily what translated when it came to the written document of the treaties, and it's very disputable, on behalf of Indigenous people.
And further to that point too, a number of the treaties were moved forward by the Crown. They were motivated to have those signed. And then as they went on, there it was actually, there was a lot of First Nations that wanted to sign treaty, seeing sort of the writing on the wall and what was happening, and especially when huge migration of settlers were moving in, that they were desperately trying to retain any of their rights and their land as they possibly could at that point.
So it was partly on the indigenous side, it was something that they wanted.
Yes, absolutely. Indigenous people were facing, different things because of colonization, because of, their livelihoods being disrupted at this time, in big part because of settler colonialism. For example, in the prairies, the decline of the buffalo. Spiritually, the buffalo means so much to people in the prairies, but our livelihood depended on that, and that meant everything from our food to shelter to clothing, et cetera, et cetera. So, when settlers came in, there was a huge, huge, I guess just a program of killing the buffalo. And actually, there's a lot of policy that you could find that they were purposely killing the buffalo in hordes, basically. And it really decimated the population. So that had huge impacts on Indigenous nations who, for thousands of years, depended on the buffalo. So that was one example, and that led to starvation. That led to them having to consider new ways of life. And so it was a really good opportunity for the government at the time, for the crown to kind of impose or propagate this idea of, hey, you should transition into an agricultural way of life. And then they didn't necessarily follow through with those promises. So they were going about this, colonial agenda by saying, hey, you should transition to agricultural way of life and we'll support that. And you can choose tracts of land and whatever land you want. You'll have all the rights to your lands. But that's not what happened, not by a long shot.
Not at all.
Saxon, you're a descendant of James Mackay, who helped out in the signing of the first set of treaty, or the very first treaty, Treaty One. So who was he, and what role did he play?
James Mackay was an interesting character. In his early life, he was born in Edmonton House, in Alberta, in the fort there, and then eventually moved to the Red River, and was a fur trader. So he really represented that trend period of transition from fur trading to agriculture. So because he was so versed in many different languages, many indigenous languages, French and English, it was a natural fit for him to be a translator on the first number treaty. And so that's really how he got his start in sort of the political world. He was already sort of a go-between and someone that was trusted by many because he was very outgoing, and people were just naturally drawn to him. So he started the process of negotiating with Treaty One, and it was very successful, and that sort of put him off in this direction of politics, of working with the Crown, and really sort of eventually siding with the Crown. So he worked his way up. He was a translator, and then he eventually became a commissioner on the last couple of treaties that he was involved in. So, it was really interesting to explore his evolution and the things that were motivating him during the signing of the treaties and how that changed over the period, even just of the treaty signing, which was a 6-year span that we explore in season one of Treaty Road.
I'm interested. Mackay had a brother who who played a role in the Red River Rebellion. So this is a very tumultuous time. So the
Wow.
Red River Rebellion was mainly a Métis uprising against the Canadian government. So I wonder, what side was James Mackay on? Where did his loyalties lie?
Oh, that's a great question. So James Mackay, being a businessman in the Red River, as many of the affluent Métis in the Red River were very much on board, or saw the benefits, of course, financially to themselves, of new settlers coming in and being part of Canada. Now, he was part of Louis Riel's provisional government, but he did not fully oppose the government coming in, and neither did Louis Riel. Frankly, he just wanted to ensure that the Métis rights and culture and language were being protected, because it looked like things were they were just going to get swept over. So that's really what he was fighting for. So when things really came to a head, James Mackay decided to head down to the US and essentially take shelter there during the resistance for, I think, about a year, a period of about a year. I'd have to look at the exact number on that, but he did do that. He went down, and then when things, quote unquote, blew over, he made his way back to the Red River, and back into politics. And then and safely sort of avoided any real conflict in that way.
This
So that says a
is
lot about his character there.
right. This is CIUT 89.5 FM, and I'm speaking with Aaron Goodpipe and Saxon DeCock about Treaty Road, host of a new documentary series on APTN. Aaron, documentarian Alanis Obomsawin made a film for the NFB in 2014 called Trick or Treaty about how newly discovered documents proved that the Canadian government was knowingly misleading the Indigenous signers of one of these treaties. I think that was Treaty 9, which is out of your series. But were these treaties signed in good faith by the federal government?
Oh, I wish you could see me nodding my head right now, just thinking about Alanis. She's done amazing work, and yeah, I have seen that film. It's an amazing film that everybody should go and watch. That's a big question, Daniel. I want to say on behalf of what I grew up with, which oral histories in my communities. Again, I'm from Treaty 4 territory, but I'm from the Dakota Nation, where we actually didn't sign treaty with Canada. So we represent a really interesting standpoint in that we're in a treaty territory and we have status rights as so-called Indians, but we aren't treaty. I from my perspective believe that it wasn't necessarily all in good faith. Again, we spoke to the fact that the government had a very clear agenda. We could even look at the evidence, which is there's a substantial amount of oral history. There's also accounts that don't line up from the commissioners, their journals and transcribers, translators. You can kind of see and put it together that it doesn't really match what was being spoken about in the negotiations versus what was written, and then therefore that written document holds a lot of legal weight here in Canada. So no, I don't necessarily believe with my whole heart that Canada and its representatives were working in good faith, because they needed to do whatever it took to get the title to the land, so they could see through their colonial agenda. And this is they had a lot of pressures to do that, right? So yeah, I don't necessarily believe that they were working in the interest of Indigenous people. That's long story short, that's what I believe.
And
I agree with that.
but on the whole, do you think, and looking at all the court cases and things like that nowadays, on the whole, is it a good thing that these treaties exist despite their flaws? Aaron first.
Wow, you just have really amazing questions, Daniel. I want to make sure to say that I don't speak for all Indigenous people,
Course.
so my own, and I want to be careful about that. And I'm formulating my own opinion as I continue to learn. But for myself, I think about our ancestors and our leaders who were called to go into treaty, because again, they also had their own reasons. We had prophecies. You'll hear about it in a number of different nations, even hundreds of years before settler people arrived in our lands and our territories, and they foresaw that newcomers would come here and we'd have to live with them in harmony and peace, right? So, the treaties, they were made in good intent, and the important part for Indigenous people is that we made it between two nations, but also that we brought Creator into that agreement. So it's a three-way agreement, actually. It's a spiritual agreement, and from that perspective, we were trying to very much preserve life. That's what I was told. From many knowledge keepers and elders and people in my community, is that our leaders then who signed treaties were going into it with the intent to preserve life. And that's life on behalf of Indigenous people, settler people, and not only people like human beings, but trying to preserve life for everybody on Mother Earth, all the animals and plants and, the life that sustains us. So it's a really, really comprehensive way of looking at preserving life and respecting it and honoring it. And, so I think the treaties in thinking about that intent, I can't speak on behalf of Canada and what their intent was, fully, but I can tell you from our perspective that I believe that the treaties were meant in a good way. They were meant to be good, and so we honor them, and we want to honor that spiritual intent behind it. And it's an ideal thing for us to strive towards, which is to live in right relationship with one another and with everything on Mother Earth. So yeah, I think it is a good thing. There's a lot of broken promises. Indigenous people have faced a lot of negativity because it impacts every single part of our reality in Canada. But again, I think our people will continue to honor that side of the treaties.
And Saxon, we only have a bit about a minute left, but what is your view on this?
Yeah, I think that if the true intention of the treaties were honored, by the crown the way they were supposed to be, and they were really about, sharing, which is what they essentially came down to, then they would be a much better thing than maybe they are today. But at least there's some sort of foundation there for legal rights, which is, such a huge thing within the system, that gives a place to sort of battle from in present day. So, that's a really quick answer, but yeah, overall, I think they are a good thing. From that perspective.
Aaron and Saxon, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
You can watch Saxon DeCock and Aaron Goodpipe's new TV documentary, great new TV documentary series on APTN. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.